And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Hey, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. We are in for a treat today, which I need after last night. All right, let me tell you what's going on. Lee Wrights is running for president for the Libertarian nomination. We're going to spend 2 hours with Lee. We're just going to chat and yak it up and get some history and perspective and on the campaign trail with. And I want to just share something with you that happened last night. There is a discussion group that's been around for decades. It met last night, and it's a lot of nice people, very smart, and very political, very involved, a lot of them. A lot of them are, gone anarchist and just, are you still voting? And but the program last night featured the Students for Liberty from Arizona State University here. There were two young men and a young woman that gave a presentation, and they asked me to just, kind of give a little perspective on, what I saw happening around the world from the youth and so on. And in particular, because I had interviewed a guy named Anton Howes, I think, that is head of the Liberty League out of the United Kingdom. It is kind of a Students for Liberty thing. Now, Students for Liberty look for student organizations around the planet and say, "Hey, man, you're for liberty and you're young, and guess what? You in the club." So they're creating this, and I guess a lot of there were candidates for office there, some tried and true, old school. I've seen them around, and they're on the other side, kind of thing. And the point that I was trying to make, and I just, I just get angry, because I know what's going on. These young kids, they're not voting or seeing voting as a cure, or they're going to vote themselves free, and they're just have gone from, in fact, some of these guys I had 4 years ago, and I'd spoken various different things. They heard me give my spiel, back in the day during the Lovolution of 08 and so on. And they remembered, me talking, and one of them, he felt that I kind of singled him out because he shows up at a student thing in a suit, and I'm just going, "Look, man, all you guys that think that you're going to become senator or something, you got to make a decision. You're going to be like these guys, they, them, those, or you're not. I mean, I which way, what path will you choose?" And knowing what these young people know. And I'll tell you, the point that I was making is that because of the internet, they can vet any idea. Somebody comes in, they try to infiltrate, they try to influence, they want to coerce, they want to, deceive, they want to, but if you did this or worked for this candidate or did, and we recruited and we all got together, and if we all just gave $5 and 5 minutes of our time, we would save the planet if you did what we wanted you to do. Well, that opportunity and that influence and that ability and that path is no longer available when you have so much information available to any and everyone in a group that anybody can come up and say, The youth understand that there is no opportunity, certainly not the opportunities that were available to generations before after they graduate college with an enormous debt. So what's their thought process? It's gone global. They connect all over the world. Arab Spring, what's going on in Asia, you know, Africa, all over the world is an embracing of libertarianism because nothing else makes any sense. So when you're talking to an organization, a group, a lot of people, and, you know, I mean, there's the crazy Ernie guys, you know, and some other people that are anarchists, too, and so on. And they just, you know, tolerate, you know, Ernie, oh, chuckle. And one of the things that was, you know, got me angry is they go, how many students are at ASU? 70,000. Well, how many do you have show up at your thing? I don't know, 100, 200, you know, whatever. We're influential. We're the only ones who are actually doing anything. You know, the other people, groups, political organizations have got no fire. They're not, you know, they go, that's it? Out of 70,000? And this is all you? Well, one of them happens to be an editor, writer on the state press, which is the newspaper there. You have a bunch of influences. You know, certainly even the women are, oh my goodness, the Liberty Movement has women now and they're attractive. What happened? So this is, it's like, are they worth saving, this next generation? And I always pull this one out when I get frustrated and I go, look, you guys don't understand. They're just waiting for you to die off. You know, they're going to replace. Oh, with what? How's the revolution going to look? You know, they're going to change. You're going to have to take positions of power. If you're not in positions of power, then you're not in power and you don't have any power. You know, you must get your turn at the ring. This is, it's over and over and over. Fortunately, these young people are starting to see the power of not seeking the power. So my, you know, I'm looking forward to talking to Lee because, you know, I want to talk about a lot of these things and the sea change on the planet. And we'll get to them in just a second, Lee. But I want to get this out, and we got 2 hours, so don't worry about it. I want to get this out because I was very angry with myself last night for being angry. And it's just, I'm just so exasperated. I enjoy my association with the young people in Generation Next because I know how much power and energy they have. They can get more done in a year than, you know, a lot of these people can in a decade just because they are able to focus. They're young. They have energy. You know, they get something, you know, that doesn't mean they may stay on the same thing. I mean, you know, you were young. I mean, you know, you go from one thing to another, and that's how you get experience. You learn, and you decide what you want to do. Well, I'm looking forward to the opportunity for these guys to have the place, the freedom, the opportunity to put their head down and plow and build whatever it is that they want. You know, they get their 40 acres and a mule, what would happen? You know, you get yourself a farm, get yourself lots of farms, get you a lot of little manufacturing, get some businesses. You know, one of the young men there, he comes out with a finance degree and all of a sudden, you know what he was doing? He and his friends are learning how to manufacture, market, and do peanut butter. That's it. He goes, you know, we just wanted to start a business. One thing that we like, we know something about, peanut butter. Peanut butter. Where in the heck did that come from, peanut butter? Because we made really good peanut butter. So if you can't find a job and what you want to do, the economy went to crap. And that was kind of my conversation with these guys, you know, 4 years ago. I'm going, look, man, finance? This, I mean, what do you want to be? The Wall Street? I, you know, what, you know, better be finding yourself a job. Maybe making one. Peanut butter is better than nothing. You know, you never know. I'm Forrest Gump. We got more money than Davy Crockett. Well, you know, maybe they will. So this is the mindset that I'm going in with Lee Wrights running for president for the Libertarian nomination. That's out there going to be free in the planet. You know, use it. And I tell you, Lee is, when we get back to him here in just a little bit, we'll come in after the break. I wanted Lee to listen to my ranting here and see my emotion. Because when we come back, you know, we'll get right to Lee. And his whole focus has been, you know, hey, can we just be, you know, anti-war? Can we do that? Can we do that? Oh, that came up last night, too, in little side conversations I want to share with you guys when we come back with Lee Wrights, candidate for president of these United States to get the Libertarian nomination. We'll be right back. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
No roads. No. Give me my space car. The old Jetson, you know, we got a step closer, didn't we? Yeah, that's right. That's a personal gyrocopter. I keep pushing that because if you can imagine it, here it comes. 100 miles an hour in the air, 100 miles an hour on the ground, 350-mile range. It fits in your garage, unfolds in about a minute, and boom, you're in the air, or you're on the freeway, it's all legal. Here we go. So, anyway, we'll put that up, you know, in today's show just because it's a futuristic thing. And I know my brother, Lee Wright, is going to help me make some points today, or he's going to inspire me and get me off my funk because I am just so, I'm so angry whenever politics is discussed. And Lee is a, you know, he's a former veteran in the Air Force, and he worked a lot since then in media. You know, he was always about free, and he was on the LNC, Libertarian National Committee. You know, he's worked in the Libertarian Party a lot on a national level. He does a lot of news. You know, libertyforall.net is his baby. And it just, we get a lot of information for that for Freedom's Phoenix. It's a lot of communication of what's going on inside the liberty movement from the Libertarian Party perspective. And he sees a role that he has as an activist, as someone advocating for freedom, is that by running for president of the United States in the Libertarian Party, is that he can do the most good there now. And I tell you, him focusing on, can we just not have these wars? Well, you know, another prominent individual that just kind of jumped in the race, you know, saw an opportunity, Gary Johnson. Well, he didn't, he just doesn't have, I mean, you know, I like Gary, but he just doesn't have the libertarian credentials and the pure philosophy that Lee does. And it's just recently he's starting to embrace this no war thing, and seeing that it seems like it's working pretty well for Lee. Well, we're coming up to the national convention this next month, and within a few weeks, and it's going to be, and, you know, people just assumed that I was going. I don't know, man. Lee, should I go?
That's why I called you.
Well, I'm so disappointed in the Libertarian Party itself, and for a lot of reasons. I mean, we've been doing this for a long time, and all the emotions and the feelings that I had last night just reminded me of all my experiences in politics, even with the Libertarian Party. And what I want to do today, we're going to take the time, and I apologize for the long introduction, me, you know, getting it off my chest in the first segment so we can talk about you for the rest of the time. But what I want to do is let's go back to a history of you in the libertarian movement. When did you first realize you were a libertarian and start associating with the party and such?
Well, when I first realized I was a libertarian, and me associating with the party came years apart.
Well, I'm waiting.
More than a decade. I mean, I realized I was a libertarian when I was in the eighth grade, and I was standing at the front of a junior high school school, everybody walking out to sit down underneath the flagpole in the front yard to protest something called war. At that time, they had it going on in Vietnam, and it was just a faraway place where people were killing each other, doing a terrible thing called war. Something I'd heard about all my life. Grew up scared to death of it, because I was going to have to go and do it too, probably. Thankfully, of course, Vietnam ended two years before I got out of high school, but strangely enough, first thing I did when I got out of high school was join the Air Force. So, go figure what life will teach you in this funny way. Coming to the Libertarian Party happened in the late 90s, where I just felt like I finally found a group that outwardly, not that I agreed with them, but that they agreed with me. That's what brought me to the Libertarian Party, a group of people that agreed with me.
Well, what's your foundation? What did they agree with? I mean, you know, you're saying, hey, you know, these guys finally.
Foundation goes back to, I was a historian, still am. That was my thing when I was in college, was history. Foundation is what this country is supposed to be about. Why this grand experiment was undertaken in the first place. For one reason only, so that the right of the individual would be the highest law in the land. And how far we have strayed from that brings us to where we are today. Me running for president, not because I'll make you free, but because I'll get up there and do the best thing I can do in government, and that's leave you alone.
Well, this is, choosing the Libertarian Party as a vehicle for anything, I'm just wondering what your successes has been inside the party. I mean, you've been involved quite a bit at, high levels in the party. All the skeletons that are in the closets. You got a lot of the history of and how they've treated individuals and people and each other and their own platform and the candidates that come and go and why and the machinations of and so on, and you immerse
right. and
yourself
all of it,
in that.
All of it collectively have taught me one thing, a lesson that libertarians need to learn, that all people in any groups anywhere need to learn. We're all human beings. Nothing special about libertarians when it comes to being a human being just because you're a libertarian, other than the way you choose to live your life. It is a life choice, I believe, not just a political philosophy. It's individuals making a choice to live their life in a certain way, to be personally responsible for themselves, to be accountable for what they do, and expect others to be held accountable as well. So,
well, I'm looking for, some kind of a usefulness of your effort. Seriously. I mean, we're good friends, and I've known you a long time.
I don't know what you mean by usefulness and the party in its different machinations. Now, I would say the Libertarian Party on a whole, and, you and I have talked about this before, because sometimes we mean different things when we say the same thing. Sometimes when you say the LP, what you really mean is the LNC, or the Libertarian National Committee, the 17, 18 people that, we choose to watch over our party for 2 years in between conventions.
Well, I tell you what I mean when I...
The fact that the party is the activists of people in this party, and a lesson I've learned, Ernie, I got to tell you. You know when this started? This started almost 2 years ago in Arizona. It was the first place I appeared.
And I was glad that you... I was glad that you came and you decided to run and to make sure that anti-war was an issue. My thing is that when I say Libertarian now, party, I'm just lumping them in with all politics in general. I mean... to me, it's kind of like, we want our turn at the ring, And I'm going, my turn, my precious, So when we come back, we'll talk about some more with Lee.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Of me, Ernest Hancock. We have on the line Mr. Lee Wright, good friend. We've been in the trenches together for, going on a decade now. And there, I want to go through some of the history so that you can see, you know, from my perspective, how frustrating it can be even dealing with politics. I'm most rewarded when we do some kind of a cultural shift, some kind of a, you know, helping the youth come up, helping people understand, or using activities to kind of convince other people that, you know, maybe for their survival they should be doing something else other than supporting the beast that's devouring them, you know, that kind of thing. So let's go ahead and go back. Lee has been involved at high levels for a long time. Let's go back to 2004 when I really started paying attention to National Libertarian Party. I had started doing radio in February of 2003. We had yet to go into Iraq. We were like, I'm getting all the guests on. We thought we were just going to do a 13-week contract. I'm going to be done with radio and go back and, you know, get a real job, start another business. We had sold the restaurant. I go in, 13-week contract, morning drive, 2 hours a day, Scottsdale, Arizona, major media market, a damn libertarian up there, and our promos went, Ich bin Edelman from the Office of Homeland Security. We do not want you to listen to Ernest Hancock Show. We'll know if you are listening, you know, that kind of thing. And we go in to promoting the show, and then I get on, and we're just going after the police state and hammering. And then, as I'm explaining why libertarians are anti-war, the Libertarian Party starts coming out, well, a little bit of war is okay. Sometimes we got to have some more, a little bit of war. And then they had the 2004 convention in Atlanta. Charles Goyette and I both went to that just to give, hey, there are some talk show hosts out here that are anti-war. Well, they're saying Mr. Libertarian Neil Bortz out there, a little war is okay. And we're going to do a little war. We have some war. Yeah, sometimes you need war. And I'm just going, man, this is, I could see what they were looking to be patriotic, accepted. We want some of the money, you know, something. And we're just, wow. You're getting sucked into this thing. Who are these people doing that? That was the year we had Badnarik became our nominee. Aaron Russo was running for the nomination, thought he had it sewed up, and he didn't because, I mean, he got up there and said some unlibertarian things. He wasn't perfect. But his arrogance and hubris kind of cost him that nomination. But it inspired him to go do America Freedom to Fascism, and we're probably better off for that. So I'm going, okay, cool. That's a, you know, Aaron was happy that, you know, his life turned out the way it did, you know, as it ended with his cancer. But I'm at that time, let's start there, Lee. It's 2004. You're the anti-war candidate. Then the Libertarian Party started to go down this war path. You know, what was your influence in that?
Well, I mean, at that time, it didn't seem like it was a big deal. It was, you know, a press release or two put out by people that, you know, I felt didn't really represent what we were all about. And, of course, 2004 is when I was elected vice chair of the National Committee, served until the Portland Convention, which is the only convention I didn't attend, by the way. But from that moment on, it was a struggle back uphill to achieve something that had always been ours. The high ground, the moral ground, with the non-aggression principle as far as war goes. There's only one defensible war, and that's a war of defense. And libertarians need to bring that back home. That's what I heard from almost that convention till 2010 in St. Louis. The same thing from young people, the same people you're talking about. Why is the Libertarian Party not out front on the war issue? This is our issue. How come we're not talking about it? How come nobody's saying anything about it? Why? That's when I made up my mind, all right, one way or another. Come 2012, Libertarian Party is going to talk about the wars on national television if I've got anything to say about it. And in about 2 or 3 weeks, that's exactly what's going to happen. We're going to get up there, and every candidate that they let stand up there is going to say something about stopping the wars. because that's what we've been doing across this country everywhere we went. And every one of the candidates that has come into this race after me, which is all of them, has adopted this pure libertarian stance of stopping these aggressions that we're doing, not just across the seas and foreign places where it's hard to see, but right here at home, the wars we do on ourselves.
I'm wondering how it is that you have to make such an effort inside the Libertarian Party.
Well, because people want success, Ernie. They're tired of waiting. They're sick and tired of waiting for whatever it is they're waiting for.
What do you think it is?
We're going to achieve something if we get into office and all this stuff. And, I mean, that's great. That's, you know, some people are going to want to do that. I happen to be one of them. Trying really hard to be the best, most serious candidate that I could possibly be, espousing nothing but a libertarian philosophy. And it's got nothing to do with the Libertarian Party. It's got to do with every individual choosing a way of life, embracing the whole idea that I am not at war. You said something that hit me hard a while ago. You just passed over it. But you said that last night you got tired. You were angry at being angry. Well, that's me in a nutshell. I am angry at being angry all the time, and I'm tired of it. I'm tired of what you have to live with, the rage, getting up every day. It'll wear you down and make you old before your time.
Well, I tell you, Lee, you know,
enough of us say it, they can't have them anymore.
I tell you, Lee, my that comes up out of me. I don't like the person. I don't like how I'm thinking. I don't like the frustration. I don't like,
Right, exactly.
You know, having these people that, you know, a lot of them have means. They have experience. They have the ability to understand what's going on. They have all kinds of evidence to them. But there's some mental.
They have the ability to understand. You see, but they don't.
There's
they
some.
They think that if we just be a little more like them, if we just somehow massage our message and use it like a little piece of Play-Doh and turn it into whatever looks pretty to everybody out there, that we'll convert them somehow. We're going to have great success. By welcoming waves of Republicans and Democrats into our party that are going to sweep us to electoral success. What a bunch of nonsense. We're never going to have electoral success in this country. No third party will. By imitating the two corrupt parties that pose as two parties and are really just one.
You know, Jim,
to make a difference in this country, you be different. You don't be like them.
Jim Dusing from Las Vegas in one of his presentations in TAN, and St. Louis, he said, you know, they're so concerned about creating a open door policy for everybody and bring in whoever wants to come and big tent and all that. And we got room for everybody. Come on in, be libertarian and everything. And he goes, you know, I was just wondering, can we make room for the libertarians in the Libertarian Party?
Well, that's a good idea.
And that really set people back on their heels. It sure as did me, because it made us realize just how much the Libertarian Party has strayed from libertarianism in so many ways that the libertarians didn't feel comfortable. So I'm going, wow, man, that just, you know, it kind of snuck up on us. And when Jim said that, we were like, whoa, that hurt. That stung, because that's exactly what's happened, is that it's all of a sudden the real libertarians have been pushed out of the party to the point that when you have the young people now that are embracing libertarianism and see Dr. Paul, you know, run Republican nomination as, you know, the most noted libertarian on the planet, the Libertarian Party doesn't even register on their radar screen. It's not discussed. It's not, you know, talk about, hey, we can go take over the...
We got nobody to blame for that but ourselves.
But why?
What's wrong with our message? What you're talking about right now is a pure example of how there's nothing wrong with our message. Young people are embracing it. We got to be better messengers. Show them.
When we come back...
There's a place for you to go. When I was in California at the state convention there.
Well, let's talk about California State Convention when we come back, because we're going to run out of time. So, you know, when we come back, let's talk about how the LP would get back on the radar screen. Can it? I mean, you know, we'll go to 2006 when they made sure that they didn't want to be on the playing field. We'll talk about that, too. Lee Wrights, presidential candidate, Libertarian Party, just a little bit.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed. You can end the Fed. But why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit don'ttreadonmeme.com. That's don't tread on M-E-M-E, fashioning the silver economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme. Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so
yeah, let's break free. You know why? Because I can. A lot of it's up in my head. I enjoy talking and meeting with people and making a progression. But when I talk to people, that is, they're so entrenched. I mean, even now, you know, as things are happening around, all around their head, I mean, they can see it happening. They see their pensions go to half. They see their investments go, you know, because somebody told, oh, stay in and deal and watch Fox News and they said and CNBC and Kramer's, you know, giving thumbs up, cheerleading for the economy. Don't worry about it, you know. And they finally are coming to me and like, Ernie, what are you, you know, what's, what you got, silver? That's it. I mean, you don't diversify, get kind of just silver. But, you know, I go, look, I'm not smart enough. You know, I can only count on one thing. The government is going to keep spending money. They're going to keep printing money. They're going to keep destroying the money. They're not going to stop. And then you have guys, you know, representatives from, I don't want to give his name, but his initials are Tom Jenny. Anyway, from Americans for Prosperity here. And he's just, I mean, he's, oh, your boy this and your boy that, talking about Ron Paul. Hey, your boy, he doesn't do, and he doesn't address, and he's going, what he's talking about is the Ryan plan. They seriously look you in the face at every opportunity, and their job is to say with straight confidence, this has to be fixed, and we're going to do it with our 50-year plan. I go, can you look at me with a straight, in front of everybody, with a straight face, and say, in 50 years? Seriously. Do you know the only budget that counts is this next one. The one you're doing right now. That one. You know, we're going to go in and do what? You know, I'm just, it just angers me, because it's like, you know, it's an echo chamber of self-reinforcing BS, and it drives me nuts. And the younger people, they get it, but you know, a lot of times it depends. And you start getting in these different organizations, the organization becomes more important than the reason you created it. You know, and that'll eventually happen. That was a big thing I was trying to emphasize too. So this has, you know, representation manifestations in a lot of different ways, including the Libertarian Party. And I like the fact that Lee's there because he has a strong personality and he goes and he's like, you know, gives him what for. But, you know, I want to go back to where, you know, in my mind, it became obvious to the planet. It was the Portland Convention in 2006 where they took the entire platform of the Libertarian Party and flushed it down the toilet. So you have to ask, you know, why did they do that? Why did they take in 2006, take the entire platform and just went, you know, we don't need it anymore? Lee, help me out. What was going on behind the scenes there? I mean, there was a lot of machinations, but there was like a prepping for the coming of Barr. You know, what was going on in Portland?
Well, like I say, Portland is the only convention that I've ever missed. So, can't speak to actually what went on. We all just know the result of what went on there. And again, we're talking about one of those things where we actually, in ways, take a step backwards sometimes and have to rebuild. It's one of those instances, in my opinion.
Well, there was attempts in 08 in Denver and St. Louis, especially since David Noland, you know, before he died, one of the founders of the party, really tried to bring the entire platform and just reinstitute it and bring it back.
His involvement alone in that effort should signal to people, particularly long-timers, people that got a lot invested in the party like I do, whether you like it or not, like you do. You know, damn, it means something to be a libertarian, and we need to be what it means. Like I said before, if we're going to ever make a difference, we got to be different to do it. And it should be fairly easy because most of us are different already. Look at me and you. We're off-roading.
You know, and the one thing, though, I want to walk this through so that people understand what you're up against, what you're dealing with inside the party. In 06, I could see it happening. You know, Charles Goyette, and I was producing for him at the time, were over at Air America, and he would have Barr come on before he made this libertarian thing because he was, you know, Mr. Blue Dress and was against Clinton and all that kind of stuff, making a lot of news. So he would be on, but he was a big drug warrior, and he had ties to CIA, and he was, you know...
famous. He was famous when he got here to us, and that's why we loved him, and that's why we embraced him. I say we collectively as a party, because as you well know, I mean, I was Mary Ruart's campaign manager during that nomination period, so I certainly was not a Barr supporter for that particular position.
Well, but I can see what they did.
That's why they did it.
In 06, they needed to clear the platform to allow Barr to come in and run as president. I saw that coming. I mean, he came out and said the word libertarian, and they recruited him on the LNC, put him, you know, pushed a guy out to put him on so he'd have some street cred, you know, clear the platform in 06, ready for Barr going in 08, and all of a sudden, all things are going to be good, and we're going to raise lots of money because we're semi-Republican.
And we did about the same electorally, as we have always done, as we've done before. And we should learn a lesson from this. It should teach us a lesson, and a lesson that we're not really quick to repeat, in my opinion.
Well, they haven't...
We've tried what they want us to try again now. We've already tried it. Softening our message. Being more like them. So we'll be more accepted. Well...
It didn't work.
You be more like a pig, you're just going to get dirty.
Well, his VP... His VP candidate, Wayne Allen Root, you know, they kind of, because you're campaign chairman for Mary Ruart, that was, you know, late in the process, she's like, look, this is it. This is the best we got. She felt obligated to just put her name up there, and it went to six ballots before Wayne Allen Root delegates and such combined with Barr, with the deal that Barr would be the nominee and that Wayne Allen Root be VP and he gets his turn next time. Well, it's next time. And, you know, Wayne just never really took off. And the reason, I mean, he's out on, I'm in the talk show industry and I get stuff from him and his publicist constantly. He was constantly marketing himself as Mr. Libertarian, and he gets on, and I've even interviewed other talk show hosts on various issues to where they say, well, your libertarian guy Wayne Allen Root says, and I'm like, you know, seriously, that's your definition of libertarian, what Wayne says? So I'm going, it's so messed up, and I'm wondering, you know, he kind of stepped aside when Gary Johnson decided to go libertarian, but because of they opened up the door, if your height of libertarianism is defined by Barr and Root and this stuff, I'm going, well, you have to have a Lee Wrights. You have to have somebody going in there that's libertarian, at least give a touchstone to the definition of what it is and the focus on not being a war party, you know, what the heck. And Judge Buttrick, that's his big thing. He's like, you know, I don't understand. Why aren't we embracing this anti-war message? What the hell happened? Where did that go? So I'm going, you know, from your perspective, you were campaign chair for Ruart. You saw this happen in 08. Heck, I was running for national chair. I'm up there giving speeches and going, you know, look, man, don't do this. You know, don't go abandoning that. You know, I could see what was going to happen. And they were of the opinion that the Lovolution was just going to all of a sudden, you know, run over being libertarian. I'm like, why? Why would they do that?
Exactly. Why would they do that with the way we presented our message last time? Why would they do that? They wouldn't do it. They didn't do it. And that should be the lesson that we learn. You know, I mentioned California earlier. When I went to California to the state convention there, they arranged an event for me where I was going to be, as it turned out, the primary speaker. Well, what they didn't tell me until, you know, we get there and we're on the way over there is that this is a Ron Paul meetup for Hollywood. As it turned out, it was an organizing committee for a group of what I would call small L libertarians who were organizing to take over the county positions of their party so they could support Ron Paul.
So how did you get in?
I took it as an opportunity. You and I have spoken about Dr. Paul many times. We, you know, we have our ways of differing, but I told them, if Dr. Paul doesn't make it, if, God forbid, he doesn't get what they want, there's another place for them to go. Here we are. And I laid out an anti-war, straight, non-intervention policy that was even more libertarian than Ron Paul's, and they loved it.
You know, that is a, you know, that is very true. If Dr. Paul doesn't get the nomination, then what? Well, that's one thing. Mary Ruart, you know, your campaign manager, she was heavily involved in Texas working for Dr. Paul. And she understood that very thing even in 08. So there is an activist in many of us, especially Lee, doing his part. More when we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Today we're spending some extra time with Lee Wrights running for President of the United States on the Libertarian ticket because he's a friend. And I want to make sure that he gets an opportunity to express himself. The thing is that, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of people, certainly in this second hour, that are going to want to use this as the opportunity to get to know Lee. And I'm going to go, okay. Lee, as much as I've been able in the last hour, I finally got to meditate, feel better, express myself, share. You know, I'm like, okay, now, as we're going into this convention, I know the whole purpose of running is to get the nomination. Now, in that process, this year, it's next month in Las Vegas. So that's not too far for anyone in Southern California, the western, southwestern states, and certainly Arizona, to go, and we can give them what for. You know, because it's like a less than $200 round trip plane ride. We just go up there and say hello, 5-hour drive. We go up and visit with some friends and hang, and it's Vegas. So This whole reason it was Vegas was a lot, you know, because Wayne Allen Root lives there, and he thought. And I'm going, all right, this is – Lee goes in, and you're asking for help of not only the delegates there. You've been traveling the country making your case, and, you know, vote for me because we can what? And how would they do that? And what the kind of reception have you been – getting around the country? How many states conventions and such have you gone to? I know you started here in Arizona, you know, a year ago or more. And so I'm going, all right, so tell me, how's it been going? What's their propensity to cast their vote? Are they excited about going to Las Vegas? Do people going there want to change the party, put it back to something else? Are they a bunch of Republicans now? You know, I haven't paid attention. Let me know.
Well, the people that are coming to support me certainly aren't Republicans. I can guarantee you that. but as you say, it's been a long process, and it's changed over time according to who jumps in and out of this race. And of course, the game changer laws when Governor Johnson jumped in and became almost immediately, you know, the front runner for the nomination. And we're going after the same thing again, you know, the name recognition, got creds in government, all the things that everybody has that's serving right now and that are doing everything they can to, you know, screw the American people out of their rights. So,
have you been at any events?
We're looking at the wrong place for creds in our candidates, in my opinion.
Have you been at events where you and Gary have participated jointly?
Oh, yes, many of them.
And you know, what is his... I mean, it's not that I don't like him. I got to know him.
Oh,
we
no.
visited and so on. But he seems like a nice enough guy. Got a lot of accomplishments. Did a good job, you know, as governor of New Mexico compared to, you know, the other guys. And
right.
and but he advocates for a tax. I mean,
right.
tell me about that. That was just,
you
like
know,
a non-starter to begin with.
Well, it is for me, and it should be for a lot of libertarians. You know, and I don't think that. I think part of this is a good example of how transitioning a campaign already in progress from one party to another can be difficult for a candidate. Because as we all know, the governor was running for the Republican nomination before he jumped into our race. And basically what he's done is he shifted his efforts, but not his rhetoric. And his rhetoric as a radical Republican would have been, and still is, of course, the fair tax. That is the way we need to go. We need to replace the income tax with something because it's got to be better than what we have. And he touts it as, a 23% consumption tax that will, as he puts it, reboot the economy for the next 100 years. Well, the problem with this is it's, I mean, it's not necessarily an unlibertarian thing to say. It's an untrue thing to say. No tax. I don't care what you call it, what it's made of, how it's collected, no tax. Jumpstarts the economy. Taxes remove wealth from the economy, from the people. The people are the economy. So if you want to boost the economy, you cut taxes and you slash spending. But you don't put another tax on people, even if it replaces an older tax. I think we're looking at a transition period that has not been long enough for someone to transition totally from Republican to Libertarian.
Well, we went through this with Barr. I mean, it's
right.
the same kind of thing with Root. It goes, you know, everybody, it's like they're not happy or satisfied for whatever reason of being in the Republican or Democratic Party. Because we had that also in Denver was the senator from Alaska. God, what was his
name? No, I don't even know.
What's the Democrat's name that
I
ran?
I don't think that it's they're tired of the Republican Party.
No, I mean, I'm saying it's also
the people that you're talking about. I believe that it was the other way around. The Republican Party got tired of them, and they had to have some place to go.
Well, this happened.
This is the natural place for them to come.
Well, who was the guy that was the Democrat that ran for president in Denver?
Gravel.
Gravel was, he was well known for being anti-war as a senator or congressman or something back in the day.
Right.
And we're getting a lot of wind noise or something. Are you outside?
Yeah, I'll go back in.
The what happened was Gravel was just a manifestation of the left coming into the party, you know, the Democrat. And of course, he was trying to write on the same idea that, you know, he had, you know, some street cred. He had some things that made him famous in the day and that, you know, he wanted to participate. But he just can't give up some of the things that he identified with being from the left. And the same
right.
thing happens with Barr and all these other guys. And it just brings me back to Jim's comment that can we make enough room in the Libertarian Party for libertarians? And I need to understand when you're out on the campaign trail and you have someone like Gary, you know, before it was Barr and all these guys, they bring all of their supporters and friends that aren't libertarian, tell them that if we go into the Libertarian Party, because they're small, because they're from their perspective, naive, because they all let us, we'll just go in and take it over, which in a lot of cases they do. What they don't understand is that the libertarian movement is not necessarily in the Libertarian Party. They thought that by getting the shiny badge, all of a sudden they get to define libertarianism. Well,
right.
Barr found out that so didn't happen, certainly not when you got Dr. Paul out there. So I'm going, you know, your role in this, coming in and saying, all right, we're going to bring it back to the libertarian movement. I'm wondering, by what mechanism? When you're going into Las Vegas, well, what's the plan? What are you going to do? Who's supporting? How's it going to happen?
Well, by being libertarian, by being different, by showing and doing things like we're doing now, showcasing our history, our own history, so that we can learn from it. Now, as you well know, every national convention brings with it a wave of new delegates. And by new delegates, I mean people that have never been to a national convention before. They are not steeped in the history of the party as folks like you and I are. They don't know all the things that have gone on before. So there's a lack of understanding that exists because of that loss of institutional knowledge. What I bring to this is a long-time libertarian. There is, I don't have any problem answering questions from the press or from debaters or from anybody else, because I learned when I started in Arizona, freedom is the answer every time. Of course, you don't just say freedom and then, you know, let people stand there looking at you like you're stupid. You got to figure out the alternatives. You've got to figure out ways to explain to people how freedom is the answer. And that's exactly what I've been doing for the last 18 months, is going around answering questions, and every one of them saying freedom, but saying it in a different way, in a way that makes sense and is clear answer to the question that I'm being asked.
Well, when we come back, I want to, you know, get an idea of what's going to happen in Vegas. I haven't been paying a lot of attention. We'll get to some details of how the National Party works when we come back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
It's me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, IA, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, yeah, go check out freedomsphoenixezine.com, where we got, that's where I get a lot of pleasure in expressing myself in an entire magazine. Dozens and dozens of pages, anywhere from, I don't know, 50 to 80 pages, depending, you know, on how creative I am. And participation of the people. You know, Lee's written for the magazine in the past. And I'm just like, you know, this is what I want to present as a rock solid, be there for a long time. One big file goes on your smartphone, mobile device, iPad, Android, Zoom, whatever. You know, that you have this and you can read each month and you get something out of it. You learn something, you get fresh perspective, you get a understanding of what's past, what's coming, what people are doing. Boom, shakalaka. That is what gives me hope. And that's what I want to brand in the future, what's going to happen. If I go on, I don't know if it's a Google thing because of my searches or whatever, but when I put Libertarian Party 2012 in a Google search, the first thing that comes up is Lee Wright's campaign. You know, the second thing is the convention in Las Vegas. So you must be doing something. So I'm looking at the speakers at this convention. I'm looking at the programs and so on. And I see a bunch of people from the 70s and the 80s, you know, and it's just the old school trying to I'm not sure what's going on. I'm not seeing the youth. I'm not seeing new. I'm not seeing activism. I'm not seeing presence in the society. I'm not seeing programs,
well,
projects.
What? No, that's the theme of this particular convention. They have chosen the theme of a homecoming. And I mean, we need a certain amount of that, too. I mean, I see value in that. I mean, part of the problem we have, the reason that we're not stronger than we are, is what you talked about earlier, is a lot of people just left. They got tired of it. They got sick of the aggravation or trying to fight with people that didn't represent their views properly or whatever. You know, people do what they do for different reasons. But this is an attempt to bring libertarians back to the Libertarian Party. Let's reemerge. Let's,
you know, the problem is
we really are.
I look at the list of these people and I go, these people are the reason why most of the people left. You know, I mean,
you have an advantage over me because I haven't looked that far into. I mean, I know I'm going to be at the convention, and that's been my focus, is just getting to the convention.
Well, I'm glad, and it's the only reason that I would, you know, make the effort to go. I mean, I can think, you know, I'm trying to rationalize it. You know, I got friends, you know, to visit and things to do, and Don and I can take a break, and it's always good to see a bunch of libertarian friends from around the country. I'll be, you know, that's one of the final things that'll help me make the decision is when I call and I say, hey, are you going to go? Hey, are you going to go? Are you going to go? You know what? Looks like we got ourselves a party, you know. Well, heck, man, we're gonna have a party at the Libertarian Party party. So this is so that might be a motivation for me to go. But I know what's likely to happen, and I've been through these since I've been going to Libertarian National Convention since Washington D.C. in '96. And as a young man, I watched this stuff, and I'm just so it wasn't until the Levolution of '08. It had nothing to do with. You know, I didn't have anything to do with the Republican Party or the campaign or any of that. It was in service of the young people expressing themselves. And I'm looking for, as you've been traveling around the country, is there that outside of the traditional Republicans and Democrats, is there any libertarian-oriented group, libertarian officers, libertarian clubs and parties anywhere in the country that have embraced or taken on some projects that, you know, have inspired a lot of people that have been an example that would even be featured at the convention or something? You got to throw me a bone, man.
Well, I wish I had more bones to throw you, Ernie. But, I mean, that's why when you go to Libertarian Party 2012, the first thing that comes up is my name. Probably the reason is because I've been the one doing stuff. Been going everywhere and doing things. We've got the videos going out. You know, go to rights2012.com and check out the numerous videos we've made, the different projects we have going on. Well, that's partly what I've been trying to do is explain to people and show people by example, living an example, that you don't wait for somebody to tell you what to do. You don't wait for permission from a handful of people on high to say that it's okay for you to do something. Go out and do it. Embrace it. Figure out what makes you angry and what you want to do something about, and then do something about it. And then come to National and tell them what you're doing and tell them what you need for them to help you. Because that's the only reason they should exist, is to help us, to help the activists out here in the Libertarian Party community. Now, the bylaws only give the National Party one thing to do. The National Committee only has one thing that it's required to do by the bylaws, and that's have a National Convention.
You know, and
everything else they do is outside of what they should be doing. They should be focusing on doing the business of the party and nothing else.
You know, this is I'm starting to get the impression that I don't know if the Libertarian Party is an asset to the Libertarian movement or an anchor. And it's I mean, you got a lot of evidence as an anchor more than anything else. I'm trying to get someone such as yourself that I do consider a libertarian running for the nomination of the Libertarian Party and go, you know, what's the support you're getting? Are there libertarians left in the party? And
oh, yeah. Exactly. There are. The Libertarian Party are the people, the individual members of this party, and they are not. This is something I have learned expressly from going to all these state conventions. They are not represented across the board by the handful of people that run the National Party.
Well, when the delegates
are not represented, I don't mean that their interests aren't represented. I mean that culturally, and you know, they're just not people that we connect with the party membership. We've gotten ourselves in the same muck that government has gotten itself into.
Yeah.
We have ruled and regulated ourselves, and we have pronounced that certain people are on high and they're smarter than we are and they should take care of things and they're better than we are. What a bunch of nonsense! Nothing happens in this party without people like me and you and Ed Vallejo and Thomas Hill and Heather Fazio, and I could go on and on and on. The activists that are working their butts off at the local level and the state level that are never heard of by the national level because they're too busy working down here to be bothered with it. Let's go to the National Convention. Let's have a party. Let's have a resurrection of the Libertarian wing of the Libertarian Party.
I'm just hoping that the Libertarian Party can demonstrate its welcoming of libertarians. I mean, it worked so hard on trying to recruit any and everybody else to the exclusion of the libertarians. In fact, they're embarrassed by the libertarians. You're too libertarian. And I'm going, this is really bothered me to see the progression. And no matter what evidence you give, an entire generation next resurrecting itself and demonstrating its effectiveness, its power, its desires in the Levolution over the past 5 years, and the Libertarian Party makes absolutely no effort whatsoever forever to embrace them. And I have to understand why. What's behind all this? Lee may know.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and Lee Wright. A couple of friends just walking this through. We've taken different paths, different abilities, different desires, different methods, but we have the same goal. And Lee, with the help of a lot of prominent libertarians and people that are going, look, man, we need to have a libertarian race here. I mean, what the heck? And there were a lot of other candidates, and they just one by one keep dropping off. I mean, it started off being and some prominent individuals, a lot of them not libertarian. They just thought, well, I'm smarter and prettier than they are. Of course, everybody's going to flock to me, and it just didn't happen. So as we're going into the national convention, it's kind of like, are we participating in the political process out of self-defense? Are we trying to make sure that we have the ability to just, try and put a shield up against something? Are we advocating for something? What are we doing? And tell us about some of the other people that were in the race and then subsequently have dropped off. I mean, how many? I don't need to know each and every one, but I mean, how many were there and what we're down to?
Well, when we started out, there were three of us, basically. And, of course, it depends on who you ask is who's a legitimate candidate. If somebody shows up at an event and they debate with me, then they're a legitimate candidate as far as I'm concerned. Started out basically with myself and Carl Pearson, attorney from New York, and Jim Burns, of course, who is a perennial presidential candidate from Nevada. Bill Still has been in the race. Who has since suspended his campaign. Of course, R.J. Harris from Oklahoma was a big splash there for a while, young man, who has also dropped out of the race. And to a person, most of the people that I know that have dropped from the race have dropped for the same reason, and that's money. The people are not able to raise enough money to go to the events and do the things that we have been able to do, fortunately. Fortunately for me, of course. So
what are we down to now? It's, at the convention.
Basically, what's left now is myself, Governor Johnson, and Carl Pearson. Jim Burns is still in the race, but I'm not sure that they will allow him to participate when we get to the national convention, which is another problem.
Well, what is the criteria? They keep changing it. Every time you go
nobody knows what the criteria is because it keeps changing it. I mean, it's kind of like NASCAR. We just we'll have a different set of rules next week for the next race. It's crazy. So, this is the problem when people try to control things.
Well, that was one of the criticisms.
This is really what the problem is people want to control things more than they want to make things happen.
Now, it was one of the criticisms of the Johnson getting in and them changing a lot of the rules. And I remember seeing, and it was really the last time I even looked at it. And it was, I get a lot of stuff in my email. Most of it goes to my junk folder. But what happened was somebody was making the observation that with the criteria that they kept changing redoing for the presidential race, this guy goes, why don't you just make it, only Gary Johnson can be the candidate. The way they were, changing all the stuff, it was getting to the point, well, they have to this. And he goes, well, why don't you just put Gary Johnson's name up there and be done with it? Because that's obviously what you're trying to do. So I'm looking, and the reason we had Mark Hinkle, national chair, on the show, of course, they were wanting to know what I was going to be doing, and I'm like, man, you ain't got to worry about me. You guys go do whatever. I've said my say. But what happened was that he actually went to New Mexico for Gary Johnson's announcing of his running as a libertarian. Well, that is a big news thing, and I can kind of, I'm not sure the national chair going for that was appropriate. I mean, how did that affect you guys? I mean, did you have anything to say about it, or do you care?
Well, I mean, of course, I don't control what Mark Hinkle does. I agree, and it was, to me, I felt, I couldn't help but feel a little personally slighted just because I had, been in contact with Mark. Mark is a friend of mine. We've been friends for many years. And I was told that because of his position as a national chair that he, didn't feel right about contributing to my campaign or any campaign, that he felt like he should remain above the fray. And I respected him for that. I thought that was a very good, true position. But then, of course, as soon as Gary shows up, then he can't wait to get out to New Mexico to stand up with him. Now, of course, in Mark's mind, he didn't consider that to be a endorsement.
Yeah, it was kind of a news thing.
But it basically was. That's what it is. The national chair, he went there. He got him to sign the pledge. He was welcoming a prominent individual into the party. That's all cool. But it would have been a lot cooler if it hadn't been for the fact that he was coming here expressly to run for the presidential nomination. And the national office, the officers, everybody, they should be the people that remain neutral in this particular aspect of what goes on in the party, because the choice of the Libertarians is supposed to be the delegates of the party. We don't do things like Republicans and Democrats. We're not supposed to know, theoretically, who our candidate is before we get to a national convention like the rest of them do. It's supposed to happen while it's in the convention.
You know, I would have been more creative in that, have one of the youngest members of the party, some 18-year-old voting first time sign a pledge along with me. You could have done it right in all kinds of different ways and have at least the same, if not greater impact.
But that whole transition was just, it wasn't handled right. Gary had a certain following already. And it would have been a prime opportunity to help build this party a little bit. If he'd have said, join me, told his followers, come join me and, support this change in the Libertarian Party because the Republican Party has left us. Well, instead of doing that, he encouraged all of his followers to stay with the Libertarian Party and to support Dr. Paul. Now, I could appreciate that, too. But, this is the problem when you have mixed allegiances. You need to pick a team and play on that team and stick with it. And if you're going to change team, then change. Assimilate to what that team is. You don't go to the new team and the new guy come in and change the team to what he wants it to be. That ain't how it works.
That's how the other parties work. Their platform.
Well, that's not how this one works. It's not how I came to the party. People should be coming to this party for the same exact reason that I came to this party. Because the party agreed with me. Not because I agree with them, but because they agree with me. We should be agreeable to people. We have the perfect freedom is agreeable. We were talking about this when I was in Missouri, and I've been preaching this sermon everywhere I go, that we have a message, a good message, that doesn't need to be argued over, that Libertarians spend way too much time amongst themselves arguing over the 5% of stuff they disagree about, and not near enough time concentrating on the 95% of stuff that we all agree about. Well, I was taken to task by some of my friends in the Missouri delegation. They said, Eileen, you're talking about a bunch of Libertarians. They're going to argue about everything. There's not one thing you can come up with that everyone will agree on. I said, I bet I can. They said, all right, go ahead and try. I said, stop killing people. And that's what we had, silence. Nobody said a word. I said, you see?
No, I'm with you on that.
When you look for a reason to agree with somebody instead of looking for reasons to disagree with them, that's when you start making progress. That's how you make a difference.
That was an issue last night, economic discussion group that we had last night with the Students for Liberty were there, and that was one of the questions. What happened to the anti-war movement? Where'd it go? What's up? What?
And, here I am.
And I'm going, I'm glad to be able to point to a Libertarian nominee seeker that, there is an anti-war contingent out there that Lee represents it, but it must
and
be
I'm bringing them to Vegas.
Well, it must be catching on because, Gary Johnson's starting to embrace that now, finally.
What I was talking about, Ernie. This, we have achieved exactly what this campaign started out to achieve. no matter who the nominee is, they have to embrace the anti-war message this time, because it's the right thing to do. It's a libertarian message. It's what makes us different. It's what makes us stand out from the other two parties, and that's where our success will come from.
You know, I know Judge Buttrick from here in Arizona is a speaker, and I know that's going to be his mantra, you know, this why aren't we embracing anti-war thing? And so I don't know if that's going to help you, or it's just going to be more motivation for Gary Johnson to be all anti-war, you know?
It's not about helping me. It's about helping all of us. This is a libertarian message in the Libertarian Party. It's not about me. It's not about Gary Johnson. It's about what's right.
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. And don't forget to visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the studios of Freedom's, and that's freedomsphoenix.com. In the next hour, we're going to have Mr. Mark J. Victor, attorney at law, criminal defense attorney here, and my partner on the Freedom Summit is going to come on. He's got all kinds of news breaking, but it's he's been in the media a lot here lately, and it's had a lot to do with, you know, this stand your ground law and castle doctrine and all this kind of defense of and stuff. He's been, so we might talk about that a little bit, but we got a lot of other things going. And I already know what Mark says about all this. Yeah, you're still voting? I mean, you know, he was probably the first guy to really make a good case for me on this whole voting thing. When we were at a lunch, and they had a couple of his employees from his law firm, and we're just the four of us sitting there, and he goes, all right, let me explain. He goes, well, if you don't vote, you can't complain. And he goes, really? Okay, well, let's take a vote. You know, I vote that we are going to take your dinner or whatever it was, or a purse on the table or something. I think it was her soup or something. We're going to take her lunch. And let's all take a vote. Yeah, we vote three. Yeah, we're taking it. You know, how would you vote? Oh, I vote no. You got to go, see, you've been happy if you could persuaded us to be on your side. You've been happy with the result if it says, no, you get to keep your property. You know, you don't get to eminent domain it. You don't get to tax it. You don't get to, you know, regulate it out of existence or use or whatever you want of your land, and it's going to become a park or take your money and your income, whatever. I mean, if you got everybody to agree with you and vote, and then it'd be okay, you'd supported the vote. You know, you've been happy with that. Well, by participating in the vote, you sanction the process, and you don't get a right to complain. Only the people that refuse to participate in this redistribution by vote of somebody's stuff, they're the only ones that get to complain. If you just you complain after voting, you're just a sore loser.
Now, whether you vote or not, you're getting robbed by the people that are getting voted in. You got every right to complain when you're being robbed every day.
I just don't want to give them the sanction, though, of the process by which they do it. And that's kind of the point that's being made. And that's why we were kind of in the mindset that we were a republic, that you have this democratic constitutional republic where the democratic part, you know, elected the republic part that was bound down by the chains of the constitution part, you know, and all this whole theory and promise of government is going away. And the Libertarian Party represented, when I was young and coming in, I was very fortunate to come in with some hardcore libertarians that answered all of my questions. And now it's called Facebook. And now it's called just a lot of hardcore Mises Institute or people out there. They go to Freedom's Phoenix or Lou Rockwell or wherever, and they get hardcore, clear answers to their questions. And like Charles Goyette's new book, Red and Blue and Broke All Over, Why Does Freedom Work? It explained, this is why. This is why you choose freedom, because of this, 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 and that. This is why. Anthony Gregory telling me about Austrian economics. I'm like, what is the fundamental core principle of Austrian economics? Is it, you know, leave me aloneism kind of libertarian thing or not? And he goes, no, it doesn't have a moral stance. He goes, Austrian economics said, if you turn the dial this way and do that, this happens. If you do it this way, this happens. You know, this is how you get more prosperity for the individual, and you make money, and people, and, you know, they cooperate more, and they have a good time, and everything. It's all peace and love. And if you go this way, you get destruction of. And then he goes, it doesn't make a moral decision on which one is good or bad. It just tells you what's going to happen. You know, if you want to destroy economies and enslave people and do all this to their currency and everything, you do this. If you don't, you do that. You decide which is good or bad. You got the big bad guys that want to run the planet. Hell, they probably understand Austrian economics more than anybody else because they're using it to kick our butt. So I'm going, you know, okay, that's one way of looking at it. So this is to me, I can see the process of the promise that the Libertarian Party would make, that we put Lee in there, there's a promise. But the thing is that it's still, you're participating in a process that's just taking your turn at the ring. I want to eliminate the ring. In my opinion.
Right.
So, what's the promise? You know, Lee gets in, you know, running, you come out of the convention. I mean, it would be a win right there. It would be, it'd be like a Badnarik moment in 04. You know, a lot of people didn't. He was always the third guy out, came in coasting in on fumes. He just was consistent. He was libertarian. He didn't, you know, offend anybody. He's a good story. Everybody liked him. He was sincere. And probably one of the last libertarians that we've had representing the party since. So a lot of people consider him more constitutionalist and kind of a right guy. But, you know, I like Badnarik. I think he's done a good job, you know. But it's as we go from that to Barr, you know, is, wow, seriously?
Well, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, to try to avoid that. To avoid the specter of someone coming here just to take advantage of us because of our ballot access. Because we're a cheap date, or however you want to phase it.
No, we're a cheap hoe.
You vote for Lee Rice, you vote for somebody that's been around forever, someone that has invested in this party, that knows libertarianism, not electionism, and somebody that's going to stand up for the principles that you believe in as a libertarian. That's me. That's why you should vote for me.
Okay, well, I'm hoping we can get, you know, a lot of the people who go there for that very thing. I mean, I you know, what's the participation
of
the states? What's the numbers? Do you know?
Well, I don't know specific numbers, but I know I got a lot of people pledging support for me coming to this convention specifically for this reason. Of course, you know, we've been going around doing all these things. You know, generally, I do very well in the debates, and he wins the straw polls. Well, he's famous. He's a former governor. All that, yeah, I know. But I honestly believe, and I like Gary like you do, I welcome him to the party, I'm glad he's here, we've established a relationship, a friendship. But I don't have to search for the answers, they come to me naturally because of I have the background in libertarianism. Give him a couple of years and he'll do just as well as anyone else, and he'll be a great standard bearer for us.
I think
right
so.
Right now, he's still representing a little too much of the republicanism that he needs to leave behind.
Yes, and I'm glad that you're there to help school. But the point is that the people that, you know, because I had a talk with Gary before. In fact, we did a fundraiser for him here when he was a Republican with some, you know, Ron Paul supporters. It was Halloween of this last year. It was that weekend. And here in Fountain Hills, we just said, look, you come and we'll, because it was just out of principle. It was the fact that the Republican Party was just dissing him, trying to get him out. We just wanted him to stay in the Republican debates. We wanted him to get, so we're going to show you what Arizona can do. And we had a good time. But, you know, the campaign, it's, I mean, it's like all these guys, it's how much organization you got to do to what, anyway. So he makes a decision. He's going to go libertarian. Well, we had the conversation, and I'm going two things. One, You know, be careful who you associate with, you know, at the high end of the party, because they're going to tell you things you want to hear and it's not going to be so. And I'm going to go. And the other thing is this flat tax thing, that's just a non-starter. So I don't know how you're going to do that. And he starts explaining it to me. Well, we got to go. Whoa. You're confusing me with someone that cares. You know, I don't want to talk about it. You know, you're not going to convince me. You're just going to make me mad. So, I mean, you know, I'm just telling you what's what. So this is I can see the reason I say we're like a cheap hoe is if you're going to have you're going to buy off the Libertarian. You go in with $10,000. Oh, my goodness. You got $100,000. You can buy the Libertarian Party. You can go in and say, I want the money to go here. We're going to do this. And boom, done. If we're going to be a hoe, be an expensive hoe. You know, we're a Van Buren down on the strip kind of hoe. And I'm going, you know, really, can we put on some lipstick or something? I mean, you know, this is just so distasteful to me. And I'm glad that Lee Wrights is there to provide a libertarian for the nomination for the Libertarian Party, and to be a touchstone, at least on this anti-war thing. And I'm hoping that theme resonates. I'm just wondering if the Libertarian Party, I mean, I'm so jaded and so cynical that by going and looking at, I'm going to be looking and seeing all the wrong things. And I'm just, I don't want to pollute myself with that. If I go, it's just to hang with Lee and, you know, a lot of my friends there and just have a good time in Vegas.
Well, I'll be there, and I'm going to stay a week after the convention's over with in Vegas, so.
You shouldn't have told me that. Well, you know, here's to Lee and his effort, and I'm glad you're there. I know that you made that. You come to Arizona. You visited with us. You announced. You started it here in Arizona. You understand Arizona understands what you're doing and why. And I'm so optimistic about the future because of the youth. And they have made themselves libertarian because it's the only thing that makes sense. But it is just as heartening to me that they don't even waste time on the Libertarian Party, because it doesn't take very long for them to see that there's not enough Lee Wrights in it. Well, maybe we can get one in this time at the National Convention coming up in May in Las Vegas. Go check it out. Libertarian Party 2012.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Okay, it's fun time for me. Make me feel better. I need to feel better. I got Mark J. Victor on the line. He's out. He's got time because he's traveling from somewhere to somewhere, so he can talk to me, make me feel better. Mark, where are you at, man?
Hey, Ernie, I am on the 10 heading to jail, where I go all the time to meet with people.
Jail? You know, you got a bunch. It's your jail day? You get to go see clients?
Yeah, I get to go meet with all these people who haven't hurt anybody. Nobody's mad at them, haven't trespassed on anybody, not stolen anything, nothing. But yet they're in jail. I don't know why they're in jail. I call them all political prisoners.
Let me tell you what's going on. There's a bunch of things I want to talk about. One, we got this political thing going. I know you don't care, but you'll make me feel better anyway. We had an economic discussion group last night, and it was Students for Liberty, three of them there, and I gave a short presentation, just kind of like, look, and you know the crowd, and it's kind of this, you know, you got the libertarians in there and the anarchists, you know, and the minority. It's amazing we're even there, and you have all these politicos and the lobbyists for and the people running for Republican high office and the, you know, big money behind some of the Republican Party, yada, yada, yada. And my thing is, I'm going, you know, these guys, let me tell you, they're going to be nice and want to, you know, be cordial to you and you invite them and do it. But let me tell you, they're just waiting for you guys to die off. This entire next generation next, they know that you're looking to them to fund all your crap and they're not going to do it anymore. Now what? Now freaking what? You know, so it just angered me from the very beginning. You even have to make, you know, these kind of, they don't get, and it went downhill from there in my mind. I know a lot of people enjoyed it and it was good to meet the kids and all this kind of stuff. But I'm seething the entire time of the stupid stuff that some people, you know, say, like our good friend, well, his initials are Alan Corwin. But anyway, so you go and you have these guys that will go, yeah, but that doesn't matter. They were saying the same thing when the Levolution started. In 08. These are the people that you go to the presentation, you say, look, let me tell you what's coming. Then it comes 10 times more than what you say, and they still refuse to acknowledge that there's even a problem. Well, that the Republicans are in charge.
People think it makes a difference whether or not we get Barack Obama again or we get Mitt Romney.
Oh, I made the, you know, Greg Tivnan, a good friend of both of ours, and he was visiting here recently and was on the show, and he goes, you know, if you prefer Romney or Obama over the other, you're just a racist. I mean, what's the difference? You know, if you got one preference over the other, and I said that last night, they didn't like that. You know, that kind of, it kind of went downhill from there. And the point that we're making is that, and I used you as an example, I had Lee Wright's running for president on the last couple hours, and you were the one that really kind of, you know, gave me the moral argument against voting. You know, you don't really get a right to complain if you're voting, because that was your complaint, you know. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is I'm so inspired by the youth, and there's a big resurgence of people wanting to just survive this thing and do something, and they're abandoning the political process, and they're becoming this voluntarist, leave me aloneist thing. And I'm wondering, you know, Mark and I are the ones that we started the Freedom Summit. And it's been, we have great, great speakers. You look at the lineups we've had, just the list of names, and you go, damn, man, them boys had it going on before all these people became famous. We knew that that was, you know, like Dr. Paul spoken at three of them. So I'm going, you know, I want to talk to you about, you know, right now, you know, someday, we ever going to do another summit? I mean, we just kind of lost motivation because everything that we wanted to do is tell people what was coming. Well, it's here. Now what? I mean, what kind of summit do you envision in the future?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm, you know, Randy Paulson is kind of like the fountain of optimism for me. You know, I was a little depressed the other day. He came by and he was visiting, and I was like, man, you know, Ron Paul, he's still up there. He's saying all the right things, and he's just not really catching on the way he should. He said, no, I'm really optimistic because if you look at the demographics, 25 and under, man, Ron Paul kicks butt. And so That kind of motivated me. It made me feel like, wow, maybe we should just say, let these guys, let the older crowd argue about whether or not there should be Barack Obama or Mitt Romney. Who cares? And let's concentrate maybe on the younger crowd and say, hey, you know, freedom or not freedom, that's really the choice.
Well, you know, let's think about that. If we were to do, you know, we've always had the idea that we would do a summit at the summit, that we want to do a freedom summit up in the mountains and so on. And we're going, well, you know, it's kind of difficult for people to get there. You wouldn't get. And then, of course, if it didn't have flush toilets, you know, you lose a big crowd. And if you did. But then we have the experience of things like Porkfest in New Hampshire that's attended by 1,000, 2,000 young people. And I'm going, so there is an opportunity there. Then we have people, activists here that want to do something. You know, Alma Summer just really pushing having some kind of a Porkfest West.
Now that you mention it, I actually been working on this, and I got some great ideas that I'm going to share with you off the air. If I can pry you away from what you're working on, and maybe we can have lunch or something. I got some big plans and some big ideas that if I can get you interested in them, maybe we can do a big Freedom Summit again.
Okay, I'm open. I mean, we've been talking about various different things. We took a vacation this last summer, and we kind of just weren't motivated. I mean, we're just, you know, I mean, we were very motivated early on in for the last decade because we knew what was coming. And you and I have discussed this a long time, and we're just like, man, it's going to get really, 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 really bad. And then our first summit was 3 weeks after 9/11. Hell, we knew it was going to get really bad then. So now it's happened. I mean, all the stuff on steroids, I thought it would be like another 4 or 5 years before we got to where we were, you know, 5 years ago. So this is, but there's got to be optimism for the youth. And I'm wondering, you know, what you think we should focus on? What kind of flavor would it have? You know, who are the people we would invite? What venue would we use? Are you wanting
You know what I like, Ernie? Look, we used to, the people who are pro-freedom, we started at a disadvantage because for most people, the government grabs them as little kids, puts them in the government school, and talks to them about the virtues of, you know, obeying and being a good citizen, and they define that in, you know, basically being obedient to the government. And, you know, the ultimate sacrifice is dying for the government. And, you know, they sort of brainwash them into all these notions of being obedient to the powers that be. So we're starting behind the eight ball. But the good news is it doesn't take very much for us to sort of get them out of that, to say, hey, let's talk about freedom for a second. Let's talk about this radical notion that you're in charge of you. You're in charge of you. How do you feel about that? And we can kind of make the case to them. And, you know, I think that people who are open-minded and who listen, I mean, really, don't you want to be in charge of yourself? At the end of the day, I think most people want to be in charge of themselves. So we're coming from a position that actually does resonate with people because, you know, we just got to get them to understand freedom isn't utopia. You know, freedom doesn't mean everybody lives their life the way you think they ought to live their life. It's like what I like to call the dark side of freedom. But we got to get people to sort of understand these concepts and accept these concepts. And the only way to do this stuff is to change hearts and minds. Just like the founders of our country, when they talked about the revolution, what they were talking about was what happened between the ears of people, not the actual military entanglements, but thought process. That's what we need to be engaged in, not politics, nothing else other than getting people to just think differently about the nature of freedom.
You know, I'm with you, brother, but I think, you know, there's a big contingent out there that's already there. They just, you know, come together and just survive this thing. Heck, they might want to just, you know, create their own state. They'll go over and do the Utah thing. Be libertarians, Mormons, same thing. You know, they'll just take over a geographical area and say it's ours. You know, where will we do that? Oh, maybe out in the ocean. Seasteading? Is that a possibility? Space? We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasy.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Me, Ernest Hancock. I got Mark J. Victor on the line here. Mr. You know, Marine. He was in Desert Shield in Kuwait. You know, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait border is sitting there doing playing Marine. Okay. And in the foxhole with him is a good friend that now is a, you know, big Phoenix PD guy, you know, that, you know, I just, you know, you want to, you know, I like David. He's a good guy, but I'm telling you. You know, we between the two of us, we got tentacles into every freaking thing. And I'm just, the perspective that we get from a lot of this is more than what a lot of people give us credit for. That think, well, you just don't understand. No, we do understand more than you think, and usually more than you do. We're going down the dark path here. And especially with you being in the criminal justice field as defense attorney, you know, I remember one statement that you made, Mark, one time you go at one of the summits in your speech. You said, yeah, you know, there's bad guys. You know, I represent them. They're bad. You know, but, you know, two things. One, they're not as bad as the government. And as bad as my guy is, it's the government's job to prove it. And I'm going to make them because that's how this system works. So a lot of people are going, oh, I can't believe you'd represent such bad guys. And really, the people that you represent and you're going to the jail to visit now, you know, I mean, how bad are the people the state is saying are bad? I mean, the vast majority of your clients.
I can tell you this, and I don't know if I said this on the radio or TV. I've had a lot of press in the last couple of weeks, but I think, and this is absolutely true, probably 75% of the people who I represent, and keep in mind, I do major felony cases. I do up to first-degree murder with the death penalty. I do everything. I'm not one of these guys that just messes around with little misdemeanor cases, and I do state, and I do federal, and I do cases across the nation. 75% of the people who I currently represent, I wouldn't mind having as my next-door neighbor. That's disgusting, if you think about it, don't you think?
Yes, I do. And you know, the families of these people, I mean, by the time you get done through this process, I mean, and for a lot of these people, it's their first brush with this. I mean, how did the families come out of this? They government lovers, or are they starting to like, no?
No, they go in, some of them government lovers, thinking that the system's going to work great and all this other stuff. They come out thinking, wow, something's really wrong here. And Ernie, I think you're going to like this. I was in court last week on a marijuana case. That was a significant amount of marijuana. And we were at sentencing, and I kind of went off on the drug war in court on the record in a big way. And so we're going to order up the audio of it. It may even be video. I don't know. And I'm going to get it to you, and you're gonna look at this, and you're going to get a good kick out of it.
Oh, no, we'll put it up. Well, Donna's just now putting up a radio interview you did this week, yesterday or day before. And our good friend George Smith is one of the speakers at our early summits and everything. He was all complimentary. I got an email saying, oh, the best thing I ever seen libertarian giving libertarian for 40-something minutes libertarian. Mr. Mark J. Victor giving it what for? So this is, you know, you have a big impact. I know one of the things, it'll be up on Freedom's Phoenix, and make sure you put it on today's archive, will you please, baby? So you go to today's archive, and you'll see it. And it's, you know, what is today? You know, it is the 19th, which means tomorrow is 420. So you're going to get a big, giant push of a bunch of new clients tomorrow, I'll bet. So anyway, so we have, when you're doing these interviews, I've been seeing you on TV a lot about this Trayvon, you know, the young black man in Florida that got shot by, you know, this other guy. I don't know enough about it to even comment, because I, you know, it's never going to be whatever they're going to say. I'll wait a few weeks, and then we'll get what the real story is. And that's kind of the tack that you've taken. They put you on TV and get you up there. Oh, we got to, you know, stand your ground, castle doctrine law, whatever, here in Arizona. And, oh, see, we knew 5 years ago or a decade ago when we started liberalizing gun laws here in Arizona even more. Now you can carry concealed without a permit and everything. We told you blood would run, you know, red through the streets. Well, maybe in Florida. Well, maybe it'll get here. Maybe. I mean, you know, it's just been comical what they've been doing. Give us your quick gist on what's going on with that case.
Yeah, this Trayvon Martin thing, from what I can see, has been an opportunity for people who don't like guns, for people who don't like the notion that Americans have a right to self-defense, to sort of try to turn this into something to say, look, these are the kind of problems we're going to have when people have guns. Kids are going to get shot. And then also, for those people who are still living in the past, who want to say, look, you can't make it in America if you're black. The old school, Jesse Jackson, Reverend Al Sharpton, all these lunatics like these guys who are doing such a disservice to the black community, they tried really hard and to some extent have succeeded at making this into a racial kind of a case, okay? That's all they saw. Guy with light skin, guy with dark skin, and that's all they needed to know. But really, this case isn't about any of that. And from what I can see, people polarized into two different groups. One group that said, let's make this into a big, huge issue, the anti-gun, the I'll call them the racist group who wanted to make this into a big, huge thing. And then the other group, the group that I was in, that said, wow, maybe we should find out what happened first. I mean, I can imagine facts where Mr. Zimmerman would be absolutely guilty of a second-degree murder. I can imagine facts where Mr. Zimmerman would be absolutely justified in shooting and killing Trayvon Martin. I don't know what the facts are. So let's wait and find out exactly what happened and then go from there. The other piece of the puzzle is that, you know, this guy Zimmerman, he's presumed innocent. Everybody seems to forget that. You know, these groups are calling for this guy to be arrested and charged, and there's even death threats out, there's hits on the guy. He's presumed innocent. I think it was an outrage that he was even arrested. He shouldn't have been arrested. If they decided to charge him, that's fine. But why arrest the guy? He was staying around. He knew there was a pretty good chance he could be charged. He walked right in. He self-surrendered. From what I can see, the guy's got no felony priors. The guy's not a flight risk. If they want to charge him, that's fine. Why drag him into custody, put cuffs on him, and seek either no bond or a high bond? To me, that's outrageous.
So is he out on bail or no?
The last I heard, he is waiting for a hearing to determine what the bond amount's going to be.
Wow.
You're presumed innocent. You're presumed innocent. And this happens all the time, Ernie. And I think it's a big problem. We got people who are supposedly presumed innocent, but they're jerked into custody, thrown into Sheriff Joe Arpaio's jail, treated very badly, and they get these ridiculous high bonds. We got a problem in Maricopa County now with these cash-only bonds. Cash-only. So the bondsman can't even come in and put up a secure bond. It makes it extra hard for people to get out of custody. And, you know, my question is, are they really presumed innocent? I mean, they're not, and we shouldn't pretend like that's still some kind of pillar of our system.
Mark J. Victor, criminal defense attorney, partner on the Freedom Summit with me, and longtime friend. I knew Mark from 94 when he first got out of law school, where he was mentored by Butler Schaefer, no less. So I tell you, you know, he's got a long pedigree of understanding exactly what's going on and the role he plays inside the middle of it. We'll be right back.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Well, I got good news, she's a real good liar. Cross the backstage and focus up the pants on fire.
Hey, welcome to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and my good friend Mark J. Victor. You know, and he's that. I tell you, you know, that's why I'm always glad to talk to Mark. He, you know, we've been exchanging emails here lately, and all the stuff he's been doing, and he and Donna were talking this morning. Mark, you're not in court. Get your butt on the show. So, and I needed it today. I'm so glad that you're there, because a lot of times we bolster each other's emotion. You know, one of us is high and the other low, and it kind of, you know, we keep each other going in this thing. Because I'm telling you, today, after last night and this morning and talking politics and everything, I'm just so ew.
That's what you get for talking politics.
Yeah.
That's your punishment. You deserve it.
You know, you're probably right. Thank you.
When you're talking politics, you're not talking freedom.
You know, thank you. You know, thank you. See, well, one thing that, you know, you're coming up with now, you're getting excited. You got different venues that you're working with, and you've been, for your law practice, you've been spending a lot of time on your Harley. You know, that's another thing. You went and bought road motorcycles for you and your wife, but they weren't Harley Davidson, you communist. So now, did you finally get yourself a Harley so you can hold your head up with these guys?
Oh, I got myself a killer Harley. And not only that, Ernie, I'm going on Tuesday to meet with the guys over at AJ's Custom Paint. Wait till you see the paintwork we're putting on my Harley. Picture this barbarian flying through the air to slay a giant beast who's coming out of the courthouse. And his tools to slay the beast, got a briefcase in one hand and a gavel in the other.
Oh, see, I just knew I could count on you. Okay. Now, this is, your optimism is starting to resurrect itself Because of what? I mean, what have you been doing that's all of a sudden making you feel better? Is the court system getting better? Are the laws being, you know, less arbitrarily applied? Is the government getting better? I mean, why?
Here's one cause of optimism. Last week, I was in court on this marijuana case, and there was a huge amount of marijuana, and there was some other drugs involved, and this was a prison deal, okay? They could have put my guys away, and this is outrageous that my guys, both of whom had no priors, it was generally marijuana case, but they were looking at natural life, okay? And so we struck a deal for 2.5 to 4.5, and they were going to prison, and I put on a huge pre-sentence hearing. I went off in court. I said things in court, and I'm still not held in contempt, and I'm still out free. That's causing me to be optimistic. I'm getting a copy of what I said in court. I'm going to send it to you, Ernie, because in essence, I attacked the judge for imposing a drug war on us all. I told him I wouldn't do what you did, what you do. I could not put people in prison for this. I gave up being the judge over this stuff.
You know, that's one thing a lot of people don't know. When I first started doing radio, you went in, you're a pro tem judge, and you were like the Supreme Court of Arizona snatched your robe away within like a couple of hours.
I think it was 1 hour. As soon as they found out that I was not going to do the bidding of the drug war, that I would not sign my name to any order putting people in prison or jail or on probation or fining them or punishing them in any way, because they were putting substances in their body. And all I was doing was just simply recusing myself. As soon as they found out about that, they revoked my appointment within 1 hour. My fax machine spit out an order signed by the Chief Justice of the Arizona Supreme Court. And those guys never moved so fast.
Yeah, I've never seen the Supreme Court do anything that fast. And then they tried to go after you. They're going, you know, you did something bad. You got to be disbarred. You got to, I mean, they were really wanting to get you, and your partner was freaking out. And I'm telling you, you know, what they didn't realize is that, you know, they had us on the case. You know, we had reporters and everything down there before you even got back to your office. And what happened was, is that they go after you for doing something wrong, which was what? You say, look, I just don't want to hear these cases. I have worked out a deal with this judge down the hall. I'll send her the drug cases. I'll take the real crimes. It's all good. And here's my minute entry, you know, why I'm doing this and whatever. You didn't do anything wrong. In fact, you didn't even do anything. And just because you got noticed for standing up because everybody else was on their knees, they had to take you down. And it backfired on them.
It wasn't shocking to me that this created a little bit of a rift. So I did a lot of research on it. And what I found out was that a judge has an absolute right to recuse him or herself just because they want to for no reason at all, period. And so I knew I had those cases, and I made it very clear that I was aware of that. And as you know, I drafted up a 5-page minute entry explaining why I would recuse myself, and that was sort of my defense. And, you know, of course, the Commission for Judicial Conduct looked at it and said I did absolutely nothing wrong, and they dumped it immediately.
Yeah, but they wanted to, you know, assert their authority, you know, anyway.
What was disappointing to me out of the whole event was I was sort of hoping that at the end of the day, there would have been some judges who stood up and said, you know, I refuse to also to impose the drug war on other people. I'm not going to do it. And there wasn't a great following. It just wasn't time. But, you know, somebody sent me an email that documented to me that there was only one judge who stood up against Hitler's Nazi Germany, and which is shocking. Only one judge said, I'm not doing this stuff. Every other judge pulled the law is the law. And, you know, can you imagine how those discussions went, Ernie? You know, I don't want to send the Jews to the gas chambers. It's not, you know, I don't think that's right.
Get on the cattle car, Judge.
And I didn't vote for Hitler. I didn't support any of this stuff. But, you know, it's the law, and I hope it changes. But until it changes, you know, get on the cattle cars.
This is, you know, one thing, you finally got your wish for over a decade. You know, you have been clamoring for your opportunity to go up against a county attorney, a prosecutor, a judge, and you've spoken before judge groups and so on and given your position on drug war. And your article, if people can go search this, legalize methamphetamine. I mean, it's Mark Victor makes an argument because, you know, it's going to, yeah, but what about meth? All right, we'll just start with meth, you know. And it was, it's a great article on understanding how damaging the drug war, even more than, you know, whatever the worst thing you can come up with. But you did get your chance. All of a sudden, county attorney here, Romney, which, I mean, not county, Montgomery.
Montgomery.
And the guy before him, Andrew Thomas, just got disbarred. I mean,
yes.
You know, this is, they're so bad. So, I mean, even their own system disbarred the county attorney. He can't be an attorney anymore. I'm just, you know, we haven't even talked about that one yet. And he's, you know, we knew this guy was whacked. You know, Montgomery's no better. So here we go.
I don't know if I agree with that. Bill Montgomery actually struck me as a pretty nice guy, although misguided. But, you know, the scariest moment of that debate for me, Ernie?
Mm.
I'll tell you, there was one moment I was really scared.
Okay, wait. We're going to hit the break. I want you to tell me the scared part after. But let me go ahead and tell you, you know, let the people know what we're talking about. The, what do they call it? The Federalist Society or at the Arizona State?
Yeah. The Federalist Society.
Well, which is, you know what? You know, lawyer wannabes, you know? So they have this debate, and they were talking with Michael Kilsky, ran for county attorney, gave an anti-drug war presentation. He go, hey, this would be a good presentation. We'll have Kilsky and Montgomery. Now they can have this discussion. They were both Federalist Society members or something, and so are you. So they go, you know, all right, well, we're going to have this ASU. We'll do it up. Well, Michael couldn't do it at the time because he was a candidate doing something for something. And, you know, we can get Mark. And boom. I don't think they ever would have agreed had it been you to begin with. When they agreed to do it with Michael, it was going to be difficult for them to say, I don't want to do it if it's Mark. Well, they agreed. And we wouldn't push it. I had the students on, you know, the air. And I said, look, I'm not pushing this and making a big deal until I get an email from the county attorney's office that they're going to debate Mark. Because I know they do not want to debate Mark. Well, they agreed. It happened. ASU, they move into this room. I go, you're going to need a bigger lecture hall. Nah, we're just big. And I go, you're going to need a bigger. Guess what? They needed a bigger lecture hall. Here came everybody. We go in. No videotaping as I'm sitting in the second row there with my Zoom videotaping. Yeah, come drag it out of my hands, man. But we were nice and we didn't, you know, we kind of just let Bill Montgomery just had a little bit of him, and then the meat of his, we just kind of edited it out because they didn't want it there, which was fine, but we know what he said, and we'll find out what Mark was afraid of as we get to the ASU debate on the drug war with the county attorney and a criminal defense attorney, Mark Victor.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
It ain't so groovy when you're screaming in the night. Let me out of this cheap B-movie. You're rushing headlong, out of control, and you think you're so strong, but there ain't no stopping, and you can't stop rocking, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, you can call Mark J. Victor, attorneyforfreedom.com. attorneyforfreedom.com. You know, he doesn't make any bones about, you know, he's a freedom guy. You know, everybody knows, and when they get into big, giant Uber, they know they can call Mark, or they send the camera crews down to Mark. And if it gets down to where we need some big woo-hoo and do it, kind of, you know, Ernie will make some media. And then, you know, it's Ernie, you know, promoting Mark, Ernie. God, we just, you know, ooh, they already know where this goes.
When somebody needs to talk Ernest Hancock out of making a big scene with his gun to make a political point, that's my job, right?
No, your job is to keep me out of jail.
I'm hiring other people just for that job.
Well, it's always good to have you there and advice on and stuff, you know, because a lot of times you get, we both have contacts in various different levels that we kind of get what the plan is behind the scenes. We know what they're going to try and manipulate in whatever way, but they don't understand. They're dealing with, you know, Jedis here. You know, bring it on. But sooner or later, it's you mess with government. It's like playing chess with a 3-year-old. They stand up on their chair, knock all the pieces off, and pump 345 slugs in your chest. I mean, they're going, oh yeah, I'm sorry, we're playing by my rules. You know, this is what happens. Now, you're dealing in the rule-making deal, but we were talking at the end of the last segment, when you were doing this debate on the drug war with the county prosecutor, county attorney here, you were feared of what?
Yeah, there was one moment, you know, I felt, first of all, I felt pretty confident. I mean, I'm debating the drug war, like, come on, what's really the the argument on the other side. I wasn't the least bit concerned about it. But there was one moment where I was absolutely petrified, and I'll tell you what it was. Just about 30 seconds before we were going to start the debate, Montgomery looked a little nervous to me, so I walked over there. I thought I'd try to make him a little more nervous. I walked over there. I said, "Hey, Bill." I said, "You know, I think what we should do is let's just switch sides. You can argue my side, and I'll argue for the drug war." And instead of just saying no, he said, "You know, we could do that. That'd be kind of fun." And for one moment there, I thought, "Oh, man, I may have to argue his side." I would have no idea what to say. I was absolutely petrified. And then he said, "But I think we'd have to do it privately, not in a public forum like this." So I said, "Okay," and I moved on. But I thought to myself, what would I even argue if I was on the other side?
Come on, you know you can make their argument. You know it's I know what his argument was.
I mean, Ernie, I could stand up there and talk about a gateway drug and how it's going to poison your mind and all. But could I do that with a straight face? No.
Cuz you knew it was, you know. Now the thing is though that what Bill did, Bill would get up, and it came down to, and that's the reason why I was perfectly happy to just edit his stuff out. He asked that we not include because, I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't care. Because I really wanted to get your stuff anyway. But I would get, you know, like 5-10 seconds of him kind of coming back, you know, and starting his thing and kind of the end of it as it segued to you just for continuity. But his argument is that the government is the center of morality to tell the people how to live, and I'm a good Christian that's been here to do that very thing. I mean, that was basically his argument. And now we're coming, you tell me off air that he's agreeing to discuss and have a debate on? Tell the people what it is.
My marketing guys have been all over him because there's this case going on in town. I don't know what the status is because I'm not really following it, but there's this church, which I'm putting in quotes, where there was lots of sex going on involved as part of the getting forgiveness for your sins, I suppose. And they're being prosecuted for, you know, escorting and prostitution and conspiracy and all these things. And so we've been all over them to say, "Hey, let's pull all this stuff out of the closet, put it out here in front of everybody for them to see and have a debate on prostitution." And they've agreed to the debate as soon as that case is over. Whether it's going to happen or not, I don't know, but I sure hope it does.
Oh, we want to make a big stinking deal out of it. What kind of venue would you have it at?
I don't know. Maybe we could do it at ASU Law School again or somewhere else. I don't know. Look, I've said on many occasions, I'll show up anytime, any place, any person in front of any audience on all these freedom issues. I'll defend freedom to anybody.
Well, you know, Bill Montgomery is, you know, he's the Christian right kind of, you know, got the power behind him of. And, you know, if he's more than happy to go up against you crazy libertarians and tell you how you need to be, you know, controlled because of. And
look, this is a mistake people make. Libertarianism and Christianity are not at all at odds. In fact, you and I have several mutual friends, Jacob Hornberger, Lou Rockwell, people like that are very religious Christians who are also hardcore libertarians. That's not the question. The question is, do you have a right to impose your views, whatever they are, on other people by force?
And he
believe
says,
whatever you want. Who cares? You can be a Christian, a Muslim, an atheist. You can be whatever you want to be if you accept the notion that regardless of what your particular views are, you don't have a right to force other people to run their lives any particular way.
And he says, yes, I do.
Well, that's why he's not a libertarian.
No, exactly. But the point is that, well, this temple sex case, it was, you know, they're going, look, you know, we have religious freedom. We created our church of, and we have a temple pose, and we do whatever, and you know, it's the First Amendment, and let's go to court. I mean, they had to know that, you know, someone like Montgomery was going to go after them, or I don't know what they were thinking, but of course, you know, they were raided, and they're going and having this discussion, and I think it's a very, very interesting discussion. Hopefully, they framed it right. Hopefully, they did a good job in making it clear what the issues were, but of course, they're looking at, you know, hey, somebody was having sex is the first thing, and second thing is, oh my goodness, somebody, you know, exchanged money for it. So it's so how they get to the details of this, we'll see. But what stage is that at? Is it almost done? It just happened less than a year ago.
And I don't really know what the status of the case is. I haven't been following it. I suppose we should probably take a look at it, because if it's over, we need to remind them about the debate that they've agreed to.
I'm man, we'd definitely be all over that. And, you know, to Bill Montgomery's credit, he's willing to have this debate. But just
absolutely.
Like...
And I do give him credit for that. And, you know, I haven't had a lot of experience with Bill Montgomery, but I got to kind of admit I sort of liked the guy when I met him personally.
Well, maybe because he was a tank commander in Desert Shield. I mean, that's what he did, right? Wasn't he some tank guy?
I don't remember exactly what he did, but I think, yeah, both of us were on the ground in Desert Storm in Saudi Arabia.
Well, you know, the one I've been on the campaign trail with him when I was running a statewide Secretary of State in 06 and then 04 U.S. Senate against McCain. And he was running for something at the time, I think Attorney General or something. And I had conversations, and Barry Hess ran for governor, and him, conversation I was part of. And every one of my experiences, he scared me. He scared me because he felt he had a righteous justification for using the law to make people behave the way that his God told him they should
right,
behave.
And I think it is a big issue, and it's something that libertarians do not do a good job at communicating, this notion that there's a difference between the legal realm, right, the bare minimum that we're going to impose on other people, which we say as libertarians is, in essence, you don't have a right to put your hands on other people, to take their things, you know? And then the entire moral realm that has no place in the law, which is all the ways you ought to act, how you should treat other people. You know, I mean, I would probably tell somebody, you know, morally speaking, you should be kind to other people and help other people who need help. Do we want to put that in the law? Do we want to enshrine that notion in the law? No. As libertarians, you don't have a right. You don't have an obligation to have to help your neighbor, and we shouldn't make that a legal obligation. That is in the moral realm. And just trying to explain the differences between those two realms is something that we as libertarians do a terrible job at, in my opinion.
Well, I think that's why it's so good to have someone like Bill and you have this discussion, because it just gets right to that very thing immediately. And all of these discussions.
I may come out, you know, maybe, I don't know, but I could come out in that debate and just say, okay, let's agree it's immoral. Now, next issue. You know, I mean, I don't want to spend any time debating whether or not prostitution is moral or not. That's not the issue.
You know, that can be debated then amongst itself right there. You know, is it... You know, more or less moral to be able to go into voluntary contracts with other people with your own body, do whatever. You know, I mean, you know, that a lot of people would be able to make the argument that that's not moral or not.
You and I and all our friends and every other guy listening know it's never free.
Oh, you're in trouble now. You know,
We're all paying.
Some of us got paid more than others, you know. But I got my woman. I'm good. Yes, I'm great. She's sitting right over here. I don't know what I'm supposed to say, but I'll say it. You know, it's going to keep me out of the doghouse. You know, Mark, thanks for coming on. Make me feel better, more optimistic. Stay there. I want to talk to you about, you know, our future efforts. You know, we'll go ahead and set up a meeting where we can go get together and do a big, giant Freedom Summit impact on humanity. Nothing less. I don't want to do anything that has less of that kind of impact. We'll see you tomorrow.